The first million-selling gospel record in the 1950s. Controversial rhythms. Being salt and light in the midst of pop culture. Singer, songwriter, actor, motivational speaker, spokesman, Pat Boone is here.
Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
Gospel music has had lots of friends through the decades and other styles of music. You might think of Elvis or Johnny Cash, George Jones, the Oak Ridge Boys. And you've got to keep this name in mind when you think of wonderful friends and people who have presented this music maybe to a different audience. His name is Pat Boone, and according to Billboard, number 10 all-time recording artist, and he's with us now. It's such an honor to talk to you, sir.
Hey, great to talk to you and appreciate the accolade.
Well, I cannot tell a lie. Going into this, your publicist sent a press release. I said, you know what? I need to have him on the show. And then I was in Nashville in a studio with Bill Gaither. And I said, Bill, I said, would Pat Boone be a good interview? He said, oh, yeah. And let me tell you, there's something we have in common. Both Pat and I have given a cat a drink of milk from the source. Bill loves to tell these cow milking stories because that's how his love for music developed there in the farm in Indiana. And I guess you have a similar story.
And I was down in Nashville, or outside Nashville, Tennessee, growing up. And really, it wasn't a farm, although we were on 10 acres and what had become more of a residential community. But my dad bought, he was a building contractor, and he bought this 10 acres and an older house, which he sort of fixed up some, and it was our home for, well, all of my growing up days. And we, because his company was small, we had farm animals. We had chickens, sometimes pigs and turkeys and rabbits and cows, two or three cows. And my brother and I took turns milking the family cow, sometimes two cows, but mainly Rosemary, her name. And each of my brother and I visited her at least once a day. I would milk one night and the next morning. For some reason, that seemed better to us than morning and night.
Right.
So it was once a day. So
right.
And then he took it for the next night and the following morning. Uh-huh. And once in a while, we'd get mixed up, and I thought it was his turn, and he thought it was my turn, and the poor Rosemary didn't get milked.
Oh, no.
But we did have cats, and on many occasions, and I shared this with Bill Gaither, that all you had to do was just to squirt a well-aimed spurt of milk, and that cat would sit there and lap it all up, boy, even though some of it was splashing all over it.
Right, right. Oh, that's good. That's good.
I got a picture of that, actually a photograph of somebody else doing it like I did it in the hall of my office.
Well, when we talk to Bill, and I'm sure with, my goodness, your accolades, you can appreciate that and pull from that a wonderful work ethic that may be missing today. I don't know if you've noticed that or not. But
oh, definitely. Boy, my dad and mom gave my brother and two sisters and me definite chores, and they weren't just little piddling things. I mean, we were to keep our portions of the house, including our rooms, clean and neat, our clothes hung up orderly, and then of course we had a garden out back. We grew a lot of our vegetables, and we had to milk the cows and take care of whatever other animals we had, and mow about an acre and a half, my brother and I, with a hand mower. We didn't have a power mower. So we mowed an acre and a half, and if we let it get ahead of us, boy, it was really work.
Oh, yeah.
So we learned that best to go ahead and mow it every few days, whether it looked like it needed it or not, just so that it didn't get ahead of us, because then it was two or three times as hard. But then we worked in the summer for my dad, a building contractor, and dug ditches and poured concrete, toted lumber. And for a princely dollar and a quarter an hour.
Wow.
And that we would then earn the money to buy some of our school books and clothes for the coming school year. And so it was invaluable. I mean, I guess it may be why I've had to confess that I'm something of what looks like a workaholic all my life, but it's only because I realize there's so many things to do, so many things I can do if I'll just pitch in and start on it, and I get overcommitted and over-obligated, and yet, boy, life is fun, and I get a whole lot done.
Well, speaking of that, and we'll talk about this some more as we go along, but the news that's out now is that there is a line of foods, Pat Boone All-American Meats. So tell us from those beginnings, they're milking the cows now to today. Yeah. With this coming, it's kind of almost full circle in a sense.
Well, yeah, from milking the cows to eating them.
That's right.
And, of course, it's a time-honored thing.
Pat Boone here on Daniel Britt and Friends.
I was standing by my window on a cold and cloudy day when I saw come rolling, and it took my mother away. Will the circle be unbroken by and by, Lord, by and by? There's a better home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky. Undertaker, please drive slow for that lady that you're taking. Lord, I hate to see her go. Will the circle be unbroken by and by, Lord, by and by? There's a better sky, Lord, in the sky. I will follow close behind her, try to hold up and be brave, but I could not hide my sorrow when they lay.
Listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Today we're talking to legendary artist Pat Boone, who is a wonderful friend to gospel music and has now launched a new line of food products, primarily premium cuts of meat. Conversation with Pat Boone now continues.
Sometimes people that are vegetarians, and I respect that. I had a daughter, Debbie, who was a vegetarian for a while. But we began to notice her complexion and hair were suffering, and she went back to eating meat. Now she probably eats more than anybody, any of her sisters. But I point out that God himself in the Old Testament sat down and ate freshly killed meat with Abraham. And if he would eat it with Abraham, then it must be okay for us.
Sure.
And he ordained that it was right and available with certain restrictions, what we now call kosher restrictions, but because he knew that in some cases meat could be host to things like trichinosis. But so he told you what kinds of meat to eat and what to leave alone. But so I know that most of us love a great steak, a roast, or a fillet, or a T-bone, or a porterhouse, or and so these Christian guys over in Colorado, very successful business people, owned, among other things, a meat packing company outside Denver, and they were, as I say, Christian guys, and they wanted to do a company like Paul Newman's Owned Foods, which he set up starting with just a salad dressing that he created and handed out to some of his friends. And when people began to want to buy some of those things, he created Newman's Own, and he gave all the proceeds of it that would have come to him as profit to, because you had to keep the company going.
Sure.
But to his hole-in-the-wall gangs and children's terminally ill children's charities. And it was just magnificent. I knew Paul. He was a friend. We were 20th Century Fox together at the same time. And I knew Joanne. And so when he started that company, I watched it grow. I had tremendous admiration for him and what he did, which is now raised, we did our own checking on it, over $300 million for his charities.
Wow.
Now Paul has been gone for some time.
Yeah.
But his work and his legacy live on. So when these people in Colorado, as I say, they wanted to do something like that, and they were looking for some kind, as they call it, iconic image. John Wayne was dead and gone, Jimmy Stewart and some of those people, and then they decided Charlie Sheen didn't quite fit the picture. But then when they thought of me, they said, hey, that, if Pat's interested, that would be ideal.
Pat Boone, you're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends, and we've got more of these wonderful gospel sounds of Pat Boone and more of his story still to come.
There are some things
I may not know.
There are some places I can't go.
Well, I cannot go.
But I am sure
Of this one thing,
that God is real, for I can feel Him deep within.
Oh yes,
my God is real,
real in my soul.
My God is real, for He has washed and made me whole. Just how you fell when Jesus took your sins away. But since that day, yes, since that hour, God has been real, for I can feel His holy power.
Oh, yes,
my God is real.
Listening to Daniel Britt and Friends with our guest today, Pat Boone. We're going to talk music and his contributions to gospel music in particular coming up a little later on the show. More than just an entertainer, entrepreneur, and spokesman, Pat Boone is also a philanthropist, and it's the passion behind his latest venture in Pat Boone All American Meats, giving back to the poor and the hungry around the world. Listen to the passion of Pat Boone.
So when they contacted me, they didn't know that not only was I in favor of the idea, loved it to start with, but that we had in our family, our household here, Shirley and I, back during the Cambodian food crisis some 30 years ago, when Pol Pot, the dictator, Cambodian dictator, herded hundreds of thousands of his own people that he considered rebels into concentration camps against the Thai border. And the Thai government would not let them cross the border. So here they were trapped in these literally concentration camps. And the mothers holding their little babies starving in their arms. It was on our news continually here for weeks and Shirley was crying and said, we got to do something. And I said, honey, this is a worldwide international problem. It's not, what do you think we could do about it? She said, I don't know, but we've got to do something. So we did a very improbable thing. We sent out invitations. It was close to Thanksgiving, so close that we knew unless God was in it, it would not happen. But we invited people from all the Christian broadcasting companies and many of the ministries, TV ministries, and the Carter White House, who sent an emissary, and from Oxfam and Catholic and Quaker Relief and all these organizations to come to our home and have a what we call a Cambodian Thanksgiving dinner. And about 80 people came from all those organizations, from the from CBN and TBN and PTL, Jim Baker, and, and Rex Humbard and Oral Roberts and the Carter White House and all those other relief organizations, about 80 people. And we fed them dry fish and rice on a paper plate with just water in clear plastic cups.
Wow.
And empathy for the, or empathy with, empathy for the Cambodians who would have considered this a tremendous Thanksgiving feast and would have praised God for it. And so that's what we fed them. And then we divided into three groups to strategize and pray and then pool our thought together. And at the end of the evening, we'd come up with a 10-point plan, starting with the use of television, of course, to reach the most people the fastest on through Christian broadcast. And within and then we appointed our son-in-law, who was working in a Christian ministry already, and he just stepped aside, took this thing on with our Rolodex, and started contacting everybody, and then many more people that he figured out how to reach that were suppliers and manufacturers of food, milk, nutritional products, even rudimentary medicines, blankets, and within a couple of weeks, we had raised over $1 million, and Dan had found an airline that would fly all of this stuff over there free, and he went himself to make sure that the all the foodstuffs and things didn't get just piled up on a dock and then sold off in the black market, which was happening in government programs. And made sure that all of it got right to the camps. We saved countless lives. And what was then called Save the Refugee, that's what the name we gave it. But when that that crisis was resolved, the concentration camps disbanded, and many, many people were alive because we could come to their aid directly. We thought, well, we've got a tight, lean little machine created, let's don't just disband it. So we gave it another name, Mercy Corps, C-O-R-P-S. It's now a $250 million annual hunger relief organization, humanitarian, and operating out of Portland, Aberdeen, Scotland, and Washington, D.C., and also Seattle, because that's where Dan, our son-in-law and daughter, and five, well, five grandkids did live. They've pretty well dispersed now. But Dan is director and chairman emeritus of Mercy Corps, and he brought in wisely people from other relief organizations that were very skilled and experienced. And so now Mercy Corps ranks as one of the top four or five humanitarian and particularly hunger relief organizations in the world. So wow. J.W. Roth, who was the guy that started the meat company, and wanted to name it Pat Boone All-American Meats, which we did, he didn't know about our involvement with Mercy Corps. He didn't know he was coming to somebody who has already been very actively, not for publication so much, behind the scenes, involved in feeding the hungry. So this fit our plans perfectly because we began to say immediately a meal for four can feed 50 more.
Wow.
We trimmed that down to feed 25 more in case people think we're exaggerating, but really,
right.
Because when you order our meats, which are in the upper 10% of all, that is in quality, of all meats produced in the U.S., We don't use any meats that aren't in the upper 10% in terms of USDA grade quality. So we're better than Omaha Beef, a big successful company. But ours are the finest. They rank with, if you're familiar with the Morton Steakhouse or Ruth's Chris, you know, that serve the finest cuts of meat. Ours are those, but we're trying to keep our prices comparable to the main competitor at this point, which is Omaha, and our grade is better and price is comparable. But we're also marketing right now through the internet and direct mail, and it's off to a tremendous start. But a set-aside portion of every sale goes to feed the hungry, and that portion, because the orders for meat, unlike most of Paul Newman's products, which are generally, you know, modestly priced, salad dressings and popcorns and sauces and, you know, all the things that they market, but ours are higher quality, therefore higher priced foods, and an average order, people don't just call an order one veal chop or one T-bone.
Right.
They'll order, you know, 5, 6, 8, 10 pieces of meat. So the average order will be $150 or more.
Sure.
And therefore, the portion that we give will feed more than 50 people through organizations like Mercy Corps. We know we keep our costs so low on the foods and nutritional and medical products that we deliver that we know that we'll take care of 50 people from what a family of four may eat of our steaks. Now, on top of that, we've formed associations with some not-for-profit organizations, mainly Christian, though not totally, and with organizations like Focus on the Family, like 60-plus conservative alternative to AARP, which is not a Christian organization. Parents Television Council, again, not overtly Christian, but trying to clean up television, fighting like tilting at windmills with the producers and sponsors of some of the filthy stuff on TV. But they have big support from maybe several million constituents in their organization. So they just let their people know by emails and newsletters that we have this association, and if they want to order steaks from Pat Boone All American Meats, that a portion of every purchase will go to their work. And that's in addition to what we, in the you know the principals in the company, are doing, and we've set aside a portion of every sale for our giving. So it's a win-win all around. We're helping other organizations financially. A couple of them did their own projections about what they think that the association is going to mean to them, and it already, and by their projections, reaches into the hundreds of thousands in the first year of involvement with us, and because it will be a repeat business, because people that eat these meats just universally say they're the best they ever ate.
Wow.
Because they're the best quality. They are. And that's all we do is the best quality. So they rave about the quality. It was a billionaire entrepreneur, well-known, I won't name him, but he supports good Christian causes like Movie Guide, the organization that Ted Baer, that grades and gives parents some information about movies and television so that they can be guides to their kids. And so Movie Guide is one of our associates, and this billionaire is a contributor to the Movie Guide work. We started in business November 8th. Last year, and we created gift cards for Christmas giving. And this billionaire bought 150 gift cards and gave them to all of his associates, and then began to get the raves back around Christmas time from the people he sent the gift cards to because they used them and ordered the steaks and then served them during the holidays and said, man, where did you find these? These are the best steaks we ever ate. And these are people that can afford anything.
Wow.
So he's really on board with us. So is Movie Guide. So is Parents Television Council. We're trying to work it out with Easter Seals because we can see that most folks may not order the finest quality meat products all the time. that on certain days, holidays and anniversaries and family gatherings that are meaningful, that to have really delicious, high-quality steaks and meats is makes it an exceptional time. But they can also know that as if 50 people, as if they'd invited 50 other people that are starving to their home, as a direct result of their eating those meats, those people are going to get fed.
Incredible.
Oh, there are people never receiving anything from God at all. Oh, they are shaking in their believing. When they don't see results, they quickly fall. But don't you waver, you keep on living in the way God wants you to. Don't you get discouraged, you keep on giving. Soon it will come back to you. You gotta keep on casting your bread upon the water. Soon it's gonna come back home on every wave. You gotta keep on casting your bread upon the water. Soon it's gonna come back home on every wave. Good measure pressed down, shaken together, running over. Soon it's gonna come back home on every wave. You gotta keep on casting your bread upon the water. Soon it's gonna come back home on every wave. You gotta keep on casting your bread upon the water. Soon it's gonna come back home on every wave. Good measure pressed down, shaken together, running over. Soon it's gonna come back home on every wave. So keep on working, seeking the kingdom, instead of just working for your needs. You gotta keep on sharing the love of Jesus, 'cause you know growing comes from planting seeds. Yeah, you gotta keep on casting your bread upon the water. Soon it's gonna come back home on every wave. Good measure pressed down, shaken together, running over. Soon it's gonna come back home on every wave. You gotta keep on casting your bread upon the water. Soon it's gonna come back home on every wave.
The gospel sounds of Pat Boone. And thinking beyond his musical career and a legacy that may outlive him, his compassion to feed the hungry, and launching a new line of premium all-American meats, Pat Boone style.
I already am thinking, man, one of these days, people may forget my music, they'll forget the movies, they'll forget my career activities. I may just be like a mythical person like Aunt Jemima or... Of course, I knew Colonel Sanders and sang at his funeral.
Wow!
At his request, wow. But if that's how I become remembered, that'll be great.
Yeah.
Family food and fun, with neighbors and friends, and feeding the hungry at the same time. Man, that'll be great. I'm sure Paul Newman would feel the same way.
Absolutely. Well, boy, it tastes good. It makes you feel good, and you're knowing you're doing good.
And I guess it is good. Yeah.
And listen, Pat Boone, I mean, is there anybody else on the planet that could come up with something like this and working with the people you work with and create a meat that even a vegetarian could get behind and support because of all the good it's doing? I mean, this is incredible.
That's right. And again, I'll remind them that the Lord himself who created us knows what our bodies thrive on. There's nothing wrong with being a vegetarian if that's what you choose. But a little meat thrown in there won't hurt. And because if God himself would sit down with Abraham, and this was just before the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, if anybody wants to look it up, where he, it's at three men visited Abraham, and he recognized that they were the Lord and two angels.
Mm.
And he killed a calf, had Sarah, his wife, kill the calf. And this was before kosher requirements were established, and he fed them warm milk with their meat, which is not a kosher thing. But, of course, they weren't even Jews yet.
Sure.
Because people think Abraham was a Jew, but he was not.
Mm.
That didn't happen until the time of Jacob, who God named Israel. So that, you know, this was pre all of that, predated all of that. But so it's a biblical thing, it's a healthy thing, and of course it's a wonderful way for family and friends. It's just not enough these days. People, and I'm guilty of it. We got to where we would sit down, have some of our, as our kids were growing up and busy, and we wouldn't always sit around the dinner table. We'd have TV trays and wanted to see a TV show we all wanted to watch. So we'd sit in the den with TV trays and eat there.
Right.
Instead of talking to each other, instead of, you know, relishing and sharing what each was doing through the day and planning to do in the next day, you know, we'd get caught up in TV. And then, of course, you don't entertain your friends and neighbors as much either. And so therefore you don't get, I mean, that's especially true out here in Beverly Hills, where it's taken us years sometimes to get to know the people next door. Because people just don't fellowship like they used to, and therefore we miss out on a lot. So that's what this is all about.
You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends with the gospel music of Pat Boone.
It took a carpenter to tear down my walls. It took a stronger hand than mine. And when he looked at me, you know he made me see I was blind. Yeah. He put my feet on the ground, I put my eyes to the sky, and then I realized it took a carpenter to tear down my walls. Well, I was living from night to night, just getting high, getting by right. I was building up walls so high and hiding from the light. While I was sleeping in the summer shade, he was watching every move I made. In my house on the hill, yeah, you know I'd be there still. Yes, I would. It took a carpenter to tear down my walls. It took a stronger hand than mine. And when he looked at me, you know he made me see I was blind. Yeah. You put my feet on the ground, I put my eyes to the sky, and then I realized it took a carpenter to tear down my walls.
Don't tell you, it is a big, big world out there, and part of our call, I mean, being followers of Christ, is to have, it's a relational faith. I mean, it really is. And what you're saying is your generation knows better than our generation, the younger generation, just how important community really is.
Yeah.
Now, you've gone through many styles of music, primarily pop, but you haven't lost the focus of your faith. How do you take your faith into the public arena that you did and not compromise, Pat Boone? I mean, we know you as being the clean-cut guy, but I'm sure, like anybody, temptations were out there.
Well, I learned two things. One, not to be in your face, because people don't appreciate or respond well.
Right.
I was talking to Doc Severinsen of The Tonight Show, the band leader, wonderful guy, and we were in Oklahoma, Oklahoma City, I think, waiting for a ride out in front of the airport. Mm. And a guy came bursting through the door from inside and said, "Hey, Pat Boone, big fan of yours. Listen, better tell Doc here about Jesus. Get him saved, okay?" and went away, and Doc says, "You know, I am a Christian." What is the guy talking about?
Huh.
And you know, people don't know, and they think they're, you know, they're not ashamed of their own faith, but boy, you've got to be a little judicious in how you go about it. So that, and not be in your face, but also have a sense of humor about other people's impressions of you. And I know that my being outspoken and unashamed of my faith over all these years has, you know, has become part of my persona, and I'm glad, but also that many people make fun of it and, you know, make jokes. I was just hosting the, co-hosting the Frank Sinatra Golf Tournament this weekend with Barbara, Frank's widow, and it's a great charity. It's the Barbara Sinatra Children's Center in Palm Springs, and she, for 25 years, she and Frank, but she, mainly she and her staff, ministered to young girls, little girls, young girls that have been abused sexually, physically, emotionally, mainly by parents, family, and they just get warped and their self-image ruined and physically they're hurt. And so anyway, I'm down there for that golf, co-hosting the golf tournament, and the weather forecaster said that the second day of the tournament was going to be just blustery rain and wind and cold, and it was going to be a horrible day. Everybody was buying into it. I wasn't. And so the first day, which was really pretty, all around the golf course, the volunteers were saying, enjoy it today because tomorrow is going to be terrible.
Oh.
I said, don't say that. You know, the weatherman's not always right. You know, I'm asking God for good weather.
Yeah.
So just sort of joking, bantering that way. Well, as it turned out, the second day, though there was a little moisture at the beginning and it was windy and cold and threatening, the clouds kept going overhead, passed on through, and by the time we finished, it was cold but a lovely day.
Hmm.
And that night at the big gala, the head of the tournament, the administrator, said, you know, out there on the course, I asked Pat Boone to put in a good word for us with the man upstairs, he said. And he said he would, and he did, and you saw what happened. And then Tom Dreesen, the comedian, came out. He was emceeing. He came back, and of course the people applauded, and I stood up and took a little bow, and it was all sort of in fun. But then Dreesen came out and said, you know, I just little food for thought. He said it was a Jewish guy asking Pat Boone, the Christian, to pray for a sunny day, and it happened. Like, why wasn't it the Jewish guy? Isn't he supposed to be closer to God? So, and of course, Shirley and I had prayed, asked God to give us a good day,
sure,
which he did. And so that was, it was fun. It wasn't in your face, but I was tickled. And then that it, one of the big sponsors in the tournament is Jack Daniels, who, you know, was a big, I mean, Frank often raved about drinking Jack Daniels, he and Dean Martin and the Rat Pack.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the Jack Daniels company is to this day a major sponsor of the tournament. And every contestant, when you go in your room, when you check into your room, there's a big bottle of Jack Daniels there as a gift. And, of course, I haven't had a sip of it. But that night, the head guy, Angelo, 90 years old, he's lost an arm to diabetes.
Oh, wow.
And he was up there saying nice things about Frank and the support for the tournament. And so I came up right after that, and I said, you know, I don't have much acquaintance with Jack Daniels. And everybody started laughing. And I said, but they've been a real great sponsor of this wonderful tournament. And I said, Angelo just gave me a little tip privately. He says, put a little of that Jack Daniels in your milk just before you go to bed, and you'll sleep like a baby. And then Barbara, after that, said, well, Frank didn't put his in milk. He took it straight, and he slept like a baby. So just those little joking
sure.
references. But then last night at the Oscars, I was asked by several of the interviewers before the event, well, which movies do you think are going to win? I said, well, the ones I voted for are not even nominated.
Huh.
Really? I said, yeah, I love Secretariat. I said, now, King's Speech, I could vote for that, and I expect it will win. I hope it does over any of the others that are nominated. But the ones that I always vote for are those family-friendly films that I still miss the days when us dads and moms could take our kids to the movies on Friday night all together and get some 25-cent popcorn and
right.
and watch the same movies together. And that day's long since gone.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I was telling the interviewer, I said, you know, we in the entertainment business, and I am in the entertainment business, are destroying America's image around the world by the things we produce and honor. I said, we used to make movies that made the world envious because they presented America in favorable lights. Now we seem to be competing to see who can do the most scandalous, immoral, violent, sadistic kinds of movies, the most depressing themes, and showing every kind of depravity, and wonder why the world now calls us the great Satan. And so I, you know, that sort of put a little quietus on the on the interview, but I'm just speaking truth as a member of the entertainment community.
Speaking truth to power, Pat Boone, and the gospel music of Pat Boone on Daniel Britt and Friends.
Oh, I used to love you, but now that's hard to do, because I got some information about them evil things at night that you do. Now the whole thing is through. Oh, you're such a devil, how'd you get me to believe you were true? Well, my daddy warned me, how my mama cried. The day I left my home, you said you'd always keep me satisfied. But oh, how you lied. Well, I should have heard my mama's words, but then I guess I had too much pride. Whoa, I used to lie awake at night and see your face on the ceiling. What a bad feeling I have when I think of how you almost got me in the ways of the world. My so-called friends say I misjudged you, my anger's all in vain, but I'm afraid you got to them before I had a chance to explain. And it caused me such pain. Well, they were such friends of mine, but now you got them playing your game. I used to lie awake at night and see your face on the ceiling. What a bad feeling I have when I think of how you almost got me in the ways of the world, in the ways of the world, in the ways of the world. Well, I believe in Jesus, what he says he's gonna do. He put an apple in that lion mouth, cooked you in a supper stew. One that'll never be through. And if he hadn't rescued me, I'd be down there cooking too. Yes, I would. If Jesus hadn't rescued me, I'd be cooking right next to you. Woo, yeah. I used to lie awake at night and see your face on the ceiling. What a good feeling I have when I think of how you're gonna get yours at the end of the world, at the end of the world. At the end of the world, the ways of the world. Don't
yeah, they call me straight-laced and square and goody-two-shoes and all those things over these years. But curiously, because I haven't been just blatant and in your face, I look for gentle ways to just express who I am, what I think is right and real, and people sort of respect it, even if they don't overtly agree. I've had now a number of entertainers come up and say, you know, I used to kid you. I used to think you were really a stick in the mud. But I see your marriage has really endured, and you raised four great kids, including Debbie, and grandkids, and you're healthy, and you look younger than I know you are, and you're happy. And I must say, I decided you must know something.
Wow. And
yeah, I said, yeah, it's not something, it's someone. And, you know, just take advantage of those opportunities as they come. One people say, well, how do you go about evangelizing? I said, the Bible says, be ready to give an answer to every man that asketh thee. And I think we're supposed to live in such a way that they will ask you.
Yeah.
What is it? What is it about you? What is it? Why aren't you panicked? with the economy? How is it? Why? How's your marriage stuck together all these years in show business and entertainment? Why do you do some of these things you do? Well, that gives me the opening. Since they've asked, you know, have the entree to be very overt then. So that's it. That's how I try to go about it. And God's just given me a wonderful platform. I'm grateful for it. Because I was going to be a school teacher preacher, I thought, way back in the beginning. I didn't think the entertainment career was really a realistic opportunity.
Wow.
Count on that. Even in a musical town like Nashville.
A long, long time ago, I did not know the Lord. I started out seeking salvation to help my situation. I had never, never known what it meant to be free. But when I got down on my knees, something got a hold of me. And I was wrapped up, tied up, tangled all up in Jesus. I'm wrapped up, tied up, tangled all up in Jesus. I'm wrapped up, tied up, tangled all up in Jesus. Wrapped up, tied up, tangled all up in love.
I see you as being right in the middle of these two quotes from the same guy. Radio Bible teacher Steve Brown says two things here, and I want to get your take on this, because I'm sure you've already experienced one side of this and told us about that. One is to live your life in such a way that you create questions in the mind of unbelievers, and that's where they're going to come to you and say, what's the secret? The other side is live your life in such a way that you may even offend uptight Christians.
I'm
sure the flip side has been, well, Pat, if you really love Jesus, you'd quit singing pop music. Or you'd get out of the movies and you'd go work full-time in the Christian genre.
I will tell you that one night, a prominent man who I portrayed in a movie, a Christian man, and he went on decrying what he called Hollywood Christians like Pat Boone and Johnny Cash, who, yes, they're Christians, but they continue to perform in Las Vegas and in nightclubs, and they...
Right.
Where people drink and gamble, and you know, they lead young Christians into thinking they can do the same thing, and they go into those environments and get tempted away from their commitments, and they ought to come out of that business. And so I was immediately called after that TV program in which he was saying these things, and a Christian broadcasting network, TBN, and said, you got to go on and rebut David. His name, Dave Wilkerson, and in The Cross and the Switchblade, the movie, I had already portrayed him in the movie. So I said, no, the Bible says I should go to him. If we have any difference, I should go to him, not go on TV and have a little war on the airwaves.
Right.
So I called David down in San Diego, and he said, I said, it's Pat, and I said, I heard you were talking about me and Johnny Cash on TV last night. He said, yeah, and he said, the Lord's already dealt with me. I shouldn't have named names, but I still believe what I was saying was right. I said, well, let me ask you, David, have you ever gone to a baseball game with your family? Yes. I said, did you not know that they were gambling on that game? Did you not know? Did you notice they were selling beer there all over the place at the baseball game? Yeah, but you didn't have to. I said, no, you didn't have to. Do you ever eat in restaurants where they serve every kind of hard liquor, and yet you and your family don't partake? Yes. And I said, well, then what's the difference? Johnny Cash and I, we go in and we sing our songs, and we do Christian music as well as secular music in our shows.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there's drinking and there's gambling, but that's everywhere. And we go in, instead of just abandoning that whole arena, we try to go in and be some kind of a good influence. And I think young people, if they're careful, if they maintain their Christian commitment, I know it's treacherous, and we always tell them that when we have an opportunity to talk to them. Look, don't think you can go in and just be a Lone Ranger. I wrote a song called The Lone Ranger.
Right.
Recorded it. And really, you'd love that song, I think. I want to maybe send you, among the other gospel music, this song I consciously wrote, patterning the song after the Coasters song called Searching. Searching everywhere, it's a way, you remember that song?
Yeah, that's right.
And I wrote a song about the Lone Ranger and his sidekick, Tonto, who was really the Holy Spirit, the Paraclete. And and how he was out there doing good things, but people hadn't heard from him for a while, and maybe he got ambushed because he's out there riding alone. Why don't we form a posse and go out there and let's ride with him or get him to ride with us so he's not out there just a target. He might have gotten shot out of the saddle. Well, that does happen to a number of performers I could name who grew disdainful of church because they got caught in the middle.
People get ready, there's a train a-coming, picking up passengers from coast to coast. All you need is faith to hear them diesels a-humming. The sun's got your ticket, you just climb on board. Well, I'm riding that glory train, you don't give me no rest. Well, I'm riding that glory train, you don't give me no rest. Cause when Jesus comes back, well, I'm gonna be at my best, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm taking my Jesus, taking by the hand. Well, I'm taking my Jesus, taking by the hand, yeah, yeah. If I hold on, you'll take me to the promised land. I know he will.
I remember B.J. Thomas, after he, you know, publicly became a Christian and sang some wonderful Christian songs, he tried to sing them in his shows, and he took heat from his old fans for doing Christian music and from Christians for doing his early pop hits.
Right, right.
And he just said, well, I'm then quit. I'm not, don't call me country, don't call me Christian. I'm just a singer.
Right, right.
Mm. And I understood, but it, with me, I've never had that problem because I've been so out front always.
Sure.
And had one of the first and only million-selling gospel songs ever, Wonderful Time Up There.
Leroy Abernathy.
Yeah, right. Leroy Abernathy. And yeah. And I've sung that in some Southern gospel concert nights and other gospel songs that I've recorded along the way. So because I'm out front about it, you know, people know that's just part of me. It's part of what you expect. And they certainly came to expect it of Johnny Cash and some other performers who just were unabashed, unashamed. And they could take some criticism from both sides. But if you feel like the Lord's put you there and you're trying to let your light shine instead of putting it under a bushel, then, I like what Paul said there in 1 Corinthians 7, I think, two or three times, that a man remain in the vocation in which he was called, which is like, I was to paraphrase it, bloom where you're planted.
That's good.
So anyway, that's the story. I know we could go on talking.
Well, the Leroy Abernathy song, what was late 50s, 58, was it?
Yeah, right in the heyday of rock and roll. I couldn't believe it when Randy Wood of Dot Records said, I want you to record this song. I said, Randy, I know that song, but first, I don't like the title. It was Gospel Boogie.
Yeah, right, right.
And I said, I don't think gospel and boogie sound right together. He said, well, maybe we'll call it something else. I said, what about Wonderful Time Up There? That's the phrase that keeps repeating. Okay.
Yeah.
But I was still surprised. And it was not a rock and roll beat. It was a boogie, what was called a boogie beat, 8 beats to the bar.
Right.
But it became a number one smash, which, of course, then gave me the reason to do it every show I've ever done since. I always sing that song. That's my closing song.
Wow.
And it's a sermon. It's a straight-ahead gospel sermon.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Better get ready. Because the judgment day's coming. Are you going to be among the chosen few, or will you make it through?
Well, now, everybody's going to have religion and glory. Everybody's going to be singing that story. Everybody's going to have a wonderful time up there. Oh, glory, hallelujah. Brother, there's a reckoning coming in the morning. Better get ready, because I'm giving you the warning. Everybody's going to have a wonderful time.
time up there. Now listen, everybody, cause I'm talking to you. The Lord is the only one to carry you through. You better get ready, cause I'm telling you why. The Lord is a-coming from his throne on high. A-going down the valley, going one by one. We're gonna be rewarded for the things we've done. How are you gonna feel about the things he'll say on that judgment day? Well, 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 everybody's gonna have religion and glory. Everybody's gonna be singing that story. Everybody's gonna have a wonderful time up there. Oh, glory, hallelujah, brother. There's a reckoning coming in the morning. Better get ready, cause I'm giving you the warning. Everybody's gonna have a wonderful time up there. Now you got your holy Bible in the back of the book. The book of Revelations is the place you look. If you understand it, and you can if you try, the Lord is a-coming from his throne on high. Reading in the Bible on the things he said he's coming back again to raise the dead. Are you gonna be among the chosen few, or will you make it through? Well, 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 everybody's gonna have religion and glory. Everybody's gonna be singing that story. Everybody's gonna have a wonderful time up there. Oh, glory, hallelujah, brother. There's a reckoning coming in the morning. Better get ready, cause I'm giving you the warning. Everybody's gonna have a wonderful time up there.
When I realized that you feature mainly Southern gospel music, you may not even be aware of the several albums of Southern gospel music that I've done and very proud of. Boy, I went to Arthur Guitar Boogie Smith's place in North Carolina. And, of course, he had recorded so much Southern gospel music, and I recorded some great classics of songs and did them with some of the original musicians. And then we created a Southern gospel group. We called them the First Nashville Jesus Band and did a lot of the just classic Southern gospel songs. But, and that is part of the reason I'm in the Gospel Music Hall of Fame right now. But still, it's not general knowledge. I was frankly surprised when they inducted me because, you know, most of the focus in my career has been on my singing pop music, even rock and roll and movies and other things. But I think I've, well, certainly more than any pop entertainer, I've recorded more gospel albums than anybody.
Right.
Along the way, it's over 20 gospel albums. Some of them, those just really, really down home Southern gospel.
Oh, good. Well, thanks for your stand and congratulations on launching Pat Boone All American Meats.
We're off to a great start. We think it's going to be profitable enough to keep it going and growing, but also very, very beneficial to the good causes that we will link with and be supportive of. We'll add all kinds of other products.
Sure.
We've just added the finest knives and cutlery in the country because that goes great with steak.
Absolutely.
We've got coffee companies offering us their highest grade coffee and want it to be Pat Boone All-American coffee and soups and stews and other products. And so there will be a much broader product base, but right now it's just the highest quality meat.
You can get all things Pat Boone online at patboone.com. Pat, again, thanks for your contributions and thanks for your time today on Daniel Britt and Friends.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern gospel. You can hear many of the interviews, again, online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britt and Friends.